plate a potential nugget.
And the other thing that really struck me was the notion of a team coach, right? In a way, I think in one of the interviews, you or one of the other co-authors mentioned that it's almost a product that Bill invented that's worth replicating in other situations. So I want to sort of unpeel that a little bit. So talk to us a little bit about how he went about being a coach of a team, right? So how is it different from coaching an individual, number one? And number two, how did he go about engaging with the team as a whole, and what was the rhythm? So talk to us a little bit about this notion of a team coach.
Yeah, this was something that was really one of the surprising revelations to us that we discovered through doing the research on the book and talking, you know, interviewing people and really thinking through Bill's approach. You know, people commonly think of executive coaching as a one-on-one, situation, which it is for the most part. And except at least in the work that Bill did here, he met with several individuals. He was coaching many different individuals here at Google. And each of them thought that he was their executive coach. But in fact, what he was really doing was making sure that the team was working well together. And so if you think of a team sports coach, you know, whether it be American football or baseball or cricket, soccer, the coach will sit down with individuals and help them work on their game. But the coach also needs to observe the team and make sure that the team is working well together. And that involves both the stars of the team, but also all of the other people in a team that helps the team perform successfully. And so Bill would, you know, how does one do that? Of course, he would continue to meet with the individuals, but he would also observe the team in action. So, you know, a team coach, you're down on the field with the team. You're observing the team in action. You're talking to them as the game is on. And that's what Bill would do. So here at Google, he sat in on Eric's staff meetings every week. He wasn't really a member of the staff. He just sat in on the staff meetings every week. And normally he was, you know, pretty quiet in the staff meetings. He wasn't too vocal, but he would observe who was happy, who was being heard, who was not being heard. And then afterwards he might go to Eric and say, you know, here's something I observed about how your team is working, you know, in this particular situation. This person, I don't think this person really was fully heard, or, you know, things like that. So I think this is the difference between this concept, which Eric started to coin as one of the, you know, the new innovations from Silicon Valley, is executive coaching of teams. And, you know, one thing Bill said a lot is you can't get anything done without a team, and business is a team sport. And that's really true. You know, we all think of ourselves as, you know, individuals and how we're managing our individual careers and so on, but nothing happens without a team in business. And so that's what his approach was, to really look at the team.
Got it. And maybe just to stick with it, Alan, if we looked at Bill's pie chart of time, right, the way he spent time at Google, give us a sense of what that picture looks like. What sort of things did it include?
You know, I'm sort of smiling at this concept of a pie chart of time, because if there's anyone who seemed to have, you know, 30 hours in a day instead of 24, it must have been Bill, because everyone we talked to would just speak about his high energy. And, he worked out like other people. He slept like other people, of course. But I do think his, because he didn't really have so much, it wasn't, you know, this concept of work-life balance, which is a healthy concept, but it sort of assumes sort of a dividing line. And I think Bill was always building communities, and, you know, he really genuinely liked and cared for the people he worked with. So it wasn't really, you know, work versus life. So his pie chart was just full. He was just talking to people all the time. He, did a lot of phone calls at night, that sort of thing. So I don't know that I could really break down, time management for him in his time here at Google. Except I would say, you know, it was probably, he would go to Eric's staff meetings every week, and then he would just meet people one-on-one. And, and especially in the early days when he was first starting at Google, he did a little bit of just walking around. There's an old management phrase, management by walking around, which may have been coined at Hewlett-Packard, or at least it was used there. And that's the concept of just, you know, going around and chatting with people, checking in on them. But I don't know exactly, you know, if we wanted to talk about percentages, I don't think I could really accurately portray that.
Sure, sure. I was just looking for what are some of the things that he might have done in addition to what executive coaches do that work with individuals. I mean, you did mention he sat in on meetings.
Yeah. You know, I've worked with executive coaches myself, and I'll go have a session with the coach and that's it. Then we don't see each other for a few weeks, and that's fine. And that's highly effective. But what Bill did was he was actually present in the office. He sat in on meetings. He, you know, sat in on Eric's meetings, occasionally sat in on Jonathan's meetings. You know, we have an anecdote from Marissa Mayer where he sat in on a couple of her meetings. You know, so again, if you're going to be a team coach, you need to observe the team in action and not just the individual players.
It's fascinating to notice how Bill spent a lot of time in meetings and in the corridors to really sync with the nuanced context at Google and some of the other companies he worked with. And that context made a non-trivial difference when it came to being of value, whether it was advising Eric Schmidt, Sundar Pichai, Marissa Mayer, or any of the other leaders he worked with. When I work with clients, I often tell them that if I only have access to the locker room and not the stadium where the game is happening, then I'm working with incomplete information, and it's hard for me to make sense of what's going on. I have to decode what's going on through the stories of the leader and the other players in the organization, which comes with its own signal distortion and noise. A similar point is made in a different context by Atul Gawande, a well-known surgeon, author, professor, and CEO of Haven, the healthcare venture started by Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan to improve health outcomes. In his book Better, that was published about a decade back, he speaks about the distinction between the view in a musical school, where you spend 10,000 plus hours, with all due respect to Malcolm Gladwell, and get onto the world of performance, and then you go from there. He contrasts that to the world of sport, where you need a coach all the way to the top. Even a Roger Federer, who's considered the greatest tennis player of all time, needs a coach. He speaks about how he, as a surgeon, paid somebody, a gentleman called Bob Austin, to come into the operating room to observe him and critique him, however absurd the idea sounds. And he goes on to speak about the small things that Bob observes that were completely in the blind spot for Atul. He talks about external coaches as an external pair of eyes providing a more accurate picture of the reality. Now, this would not be possible if Bob didn't observe these things firsthand in the operating room. So if you're listening to the podcast and are a coach or working with a coach either for yourself or somebody else in the organization, do pause and ask the question, what access are you providing to the real action for them to form an accurate picture of the reality? Thank you for listening. For more, you could visit the recently revamped website, playtopotential.com. For bite-sized content by theme, please visit the curated playlist section at the website. If you're deriving value in the content and wish to show your gratitude, I would request you to pay it forward by contributing to Antarang Foundation by visiting the Pay It Forward section on the website playtopotential.com. Your contributions will help thousands of young Indians who come from challenging backgrounds play to their potential. Thank you.